Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Two Legs. It's episode 131. Tom Hunyadi here, along with my co-host, Andy Nichols. Andy, what's going on?
Good afternoon, partner. How are you?
Doing excellent. I got another fun show today. We got a wonderful guest that I'm going to introduce here in a second. But, you know, we're going to talk about the women in McCartney's lives. And we got just like the perfect guest for this, because she hosts a brand new show, one of the newest Beatles-related podcasts out there. There's been just so many of them the last 2 years, or even since the pandemic started. And we're talking none other than Natalia Cardenas. And not only does she host this wonderful show called She Loves You, where they talk about, or she talks about, the women in the lives of the Beatles, right? And then she also has a Cynthia Lennon Instagram page. And Natalia, how are you? Thanks for being here.
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Cool.
Happy to have you. This is a first for us. It's our first female guest, and we're
With you, actually.
I'm sorry, that's wrong. We had Kit. We had Kit too.
Yeah, the queen was here first. So, but she's the queen. Yeah. So
you're gonna have anyone. It might as well be her. Yeah, exactly. Right.
That's right. But nonetheless, it's great to have another woman here to get a woman's perspective on this particular topic. And again, you know, you fit the bill perfectly. But before we get to that, I just got some stuff in the mail. As we know, a couple months ago, the UK announced this big McCartney stamps campaign. So I did finally get some in the mail.
Are you going to even use them, though? Really? Come on. Be
honest. Oh, why would I do that?
I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Why would I do that? Awesome. But yeah, but, you know, I ordered 5 sets. I got 4 in the mail. So I'm waiting on one more. And then once I saw how nice they were, I ordered a couple more.
Where's mine?
Yeah, I'll send you a postcard.
Thank you.
So, yeah, but I was really impressed with these. They're really nice. They're presented nice. They come in this nice little folder, you know, to see through here so you can see it. But you know, you got the McCartney 3 stamps.
Oh, I like that. That is nice.
And then you got the Ram stamps as well.
Oh, the Ram ones are so pretty. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Nice and glossy too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just like I said, it's got that clear cover on it. So
right, to cover it.
Right, so that's what, you know, so they're really cool. There's still, I think only one thing is no longer available. So there's all these, I mean, I think there's over 30 different variations that you can get.
Right.
And I think they're really cool. And like I said, I ordered a couple more.
Of course you did.
As you know. Should. Yeah.
Yes. The McCartney collection, you know, it never stops. So the wheels just keep on going. I did get the Tropic Island Hum yellow vinyl 45 in the mail as well. So that was cool. So I'll show that another time. But today, like I said, we're going to be talking about the women in McCartney's life. You know, let's just say all of them were, you know, pretty much playboys. None of them were.
Hear me, women and wives.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
they were the Beatles. What are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do? You know, and like I said earlier, it's gonna be cool to hear a woman's perspective on that, because you know they weren't perfect. You know, they fooled around, and I mean, they lived the rock star lives, you know. So, but the first one we're going to start with is her name was Dorothy Roan. I think that's how you pronounce it. She goes by Dot. And she was 16 when they met at the Casbah, probably late 59, I want to say.
Yeah, around there, yeah.
You know, but here's the thing, is it's kind of funny because her and Cynthia ended up being really close friends.
Yeah, and they were best friends, I'd say, actually, a lot of the time.
Right, right. And, you know, back then, John and Paul, they were big Brigitte Bardot fans. So,
yes.
You know, it's funny because, you know, Linda became a blonde because of that, for the most part, right? I think she dyed her hair.
You know, I mean, it was naturally blonde, but at the same time, I think that's what really drew, like, you know, them to each other was her blondness, her natural blondness, I guess you could say. But yeah, I'd say something about that. Yeah.
And so, and even though Paul wasn't as like controlling as John may have been, you know, she was still had to, you know, I think Paul made her quit smoking. She made her, you know, he picked her wardrobe. Yeah. And, you know, then funny things like that. She couldn't dance with anybody during their performances.
Which is like nuts now. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it was, and I always say like, he was like a man of his time, right? You know, he
right.
Which is not an excuse, but at the same time, it's just, it was what it was back then. And, you know, unfortunately she like catered to his every need in a lot of
right.
ways. But I think, I mean, I also has to do, I think she was so young, right? They were both right. so young, and you're like naive and you fall in love and all
right.
that.
So, yeah. Plus, she didn't have the upbringing that Paul did too. I mean, I think she lived with an alcoholic father as well. She
did. Yeah, which didn't help. Because you always, like, I guess, seek sort of a, and you, I don't know if, like, you seek a man, but I think you seek sort of a person that's going to be able to say, like, it's going to be okay, you know, like, I got right. you. So, you know, you got this young Paul McCartney who's, you know, not bad looking, and he's telling you all the stuff, like, you know, all sweet. Of course, you're going to be like, yeah, I'll do whatever he says. Sure. You know? I mean, like, you know, young Paul McCartney tells you to do something.
Right, yeah. right, right. But like most women in that time that got to in that circle, I mean, she first was fell for John because of his more rugged, you know, attitude and looks. But then again, he was seeing Cynthia. So, but I get, you know, obviously that didn't stop John from seeing us.
Never stopped him, right? Yeah. You know. No, I mean, it's kind of crazy because like they never stopped them, right? Like obviously,
right.
you know, being young. And I think it had to do with a lot, the fact that they had to grow up pretty quick, I think. Also,
exactly. Yeah.
You know, so I like we know they had a wandering eye. We know that, but it's just one mm-hmm. of those things where it's like it happened, you know.
Right. And then one of the places that they do grow quick is in Hamburg. I mean, they're there, what three years in a row, wasn't Andy? I think they performed in Hamburg, I think 60, yeah. 61, and then again 62.
End of 60 or 61 right. and a little bit of 62, yeah.
Right. So, you know, then they're off again. Now they're away from their women, you know, and they're playing God knows how many hours a day, you know, overnight. And obviously, like you said, Paul had admit that he was seeing other women at this time too.
Yeah.
But you know, but the cool thing was that both Dot and Cynthia came down together to visit.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's the thing. I think like people are like, oh, they probably just wanted to get away from, you know, having to have a girlfriend and all that. But no, John and Paul were really insistent. Like they really wanted them to be there. And because I think so many people forget that. They're like, oh, you know, they were dating so-and-so, but you know, they were just hooking up with everybody else. But no, they really wanted them there. And it shows, I think, by, you know, like how supportive Dot and Cynthia both were. So definitely. Yeah.
Right.
And yeah.
Right. So to kind of like honor that commitment from Dot, I mean, Paul ends up buying her an engagement ring. I think this was in 62.
Yeah.
And, but this was before then that she gets pregnant, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think they were engaged before then, but yeah, you're right. Then the pregnancy just.
Yeah. Which really kind of, you know, forced the hand then. I mean, what's Paul going to do? Is he going to run away?
Right.
Or is he going to man up and, you know, do the right thing, which, you know, thanks to the help of his father, you know, kind of pushes them in the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like really interesting because I was like rereading, because like just to refresh my mind, I was like rereading and, you know, Paul's dad was not that angry about it. He actually was kind of delighted at the fact he was going to be a grandpa, which is like so funny to me because I'm like, he's so young, but you know, I guess.
Hey, it's Irish. It's Irish roots. It's Liverpool. It's, exactly. You know, families are big there. So it's not totally. To be.
Totally.
Yeah. So,
right. Which is completely the opposite of that generation before, because then they were getting married later in life. You know, the guys were like 40s and 50s by the time they were actually having
kids. Paul's father was like 40 when he was born.
Right.
You know?
That's true.
So kind of interesting, because then you did see a lot of, you know, teenagers, you know, getting pregnant, you know, come late 50s, early 60s.
Well, baby boomers, really. You know, right. Post-war babies, yeah. That whole generation. I mean,
you had to procreate, right? The men come back from the war, you got to make the babies, you got to provide the home and all of that. Yeah, definitely. Right.
Yeah. So I mean, yeah, but then, unfortunately, I think it was in the third month, she miscarriages, and then all of a sudden, it just seems like after that, the relationship just kind of fizzles a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously the pregnancy was the one thing to really, like, bind the whole, like, gonna get married thing. And I think Paul realized he didn't have to necessarily be responsible anymore. Right. And I think he realized, okay, maybe, you know, it's done. I shouldn't have to, which is sad, because, like, I genuinely think they did like each other a lot. And I'm like, oh no. No. Because I always do feel for her, because she went through so much with him, and then a really right. kind of short amount of time too, when you think about it. It wasn't very, like, long, but
right.
You
know. Her story hasn't been as well publicized, though. I mean, she hasn't really, I mean, you would know better than us, but I don't think she's really ever gone on record, really. I mean, about it.
Well, I mean, she's quoted in a few books. She's quoted in the Howard Soane's book. So, I mean, it's not like she hasn't been interviewed. She has been interviewed, and, you know, I reached out to our friend Ethan to see if he can hunt her down
for her. Right, but I mean, even still, it's just like, yeah, she might be on, you know, quoted here and there, but she really hasn't been prolific about her period with Paul. No.
And I think she's, I think that's totally how she is. She's just a very private yeah. person. She lives in Canada now, I think, and she has, like, yes. a family and everything, and definitely. But no, you're right. Like, even if she has been quoted and all that, I really think it's only, like, us crazy Beatle fans that really
we're the only ones that know about these people.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
Like, not a lot of people do, but yeah.
Right, right. So, I mean, Paul has gone on record saying that she was one of the most nuts. She was one of the nicest women that he's, you know, ever been involved with, just under Linda, probably. Aww. But, you know, but then reading, I was kind of surprised that you know, when they went to Canada, the Beatles, when they toured, they you know, they got to see each other again, and then in 76 for that tour, they ended up
they met back up then, really, later on.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Which is such a funny kind of, like, fate is, like, not letting them not see each other apart type thing. Right. And I think they were gonna have a baby, you know, so it, you know, it binds you, even if it didn't happen, you know, like, you still have that right. bond, you know. But yeah, they did, which is, I love that story. But yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's been said that, I think Dot has said this, that the songs Love of the Loved and P.S. I Love You were written about her.
Yes. Yeah. Which I totally believe. I totally believe that, 100%.
They have that kind of, you know, kind of, like, puppy love charm to them.
Yeah.
Those,
you
know,
yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
They
that's
do.
That's a good way to put it. So her and Cynthia ended up becoming, like you said, really good friends. I mean, she moved in with Cynthia when she was pregnant with Julian.
A little before then, and then kind of during. Okay. They were all living right. together.
She moved into Mendips with Mimi.
Yes. Oh God. Yeah. Before that. Oh,
yeah. That poor lady.
I don't think I could have ever lived with Mimi.
Oh,
paid me $1 million, trillions. I would be like, nope.
Well, she was like, she was really kind of very, like, very hypocritical. Like, she ended up carrying on, like, she have, like, that boarder that, like, lived with her for a while, right? And she it was just like right there.
The irony of all ironies, right? You know,
yes.
She thought nobody knew, but it was so obvious, you know. It was
You know, she's breaking John's chops about all this stuff.
Right.
That's what she's doing. You're coming across
as a man in there, you know.
Yes.
But here's that. That's kind of what Paul's looking for. You know, someone he can kind of control a little bit.
Yeah,
she's not out to rule the world. She doesn't look like she's going to be a career woman, you know, like a woman that we're going to be talking about here soon. She looks like she'd be perfectly fine just being a home, you know, a housewife.
Make
you know
her
what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah. You know, which is, you know, kind of, you know, when we talk about Jane, it's kind of like almost what he wants in a way.
Right. Totally.
But in a way then too, it's also kind of good that it just, they just left it and ended it, because here now this band is just going to get ready. Is just getting ready to explode.
Totally. You know? For sure. Definitely. You
know? So probably better off that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, like, obviously things happen for a reason, and I always say that. Like, I'm not really sure I believe in, like, destiny and all that, but I just definitely think life plays out the way it's supposed to in a lot of certain ways.
Right.
So, you know, you gotta think,
you know, would Paul get bored of her, kind of like John got a little bit bored with Cynthia, maybe, in a way, you know.
I mean, yeah, there's no way of telling, obviously, right. You know, because you never know.
Right.
I definitely think Paul, you know, of the two, I think Paul was the one who took marriage maybe a little more seriously in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But then again, he was young. So, like, who really knows? I mean, possibly that could have happened, but who knows?
Couldn't see Paul settling down at that age. He was too creative. Yeah. I mean, like, that's why I think John was very jealous of his bachelorhood to go and be the guy to go explore London, the underground, the culture, where John is just home in his mansion, you know? So that's...
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, like, I think there was a sort of, you know, I think John said something to that, like, you know, here I was married while Paul was getting all the girls and doing all this. And
he was doing all right himself.
Yeah. I mean, but then again, that's the irony of all ironies, right? It never stopped you. So you know, like, what's stopping you from just doing what you want? But yeah, I mean, it's just the hypocriticalness. But anyway.
Right. That's funny. Well, let's move on a little bit. So that relationship ends up. He does have a couple brief relationships before his next serious relationship. And it's pretty cool because both of them have relationships to other kind of famous people around that time. One being Thelma Pickles, who, again, previously dated Lennon.
I was just saying, she was with John before that.
She wasn't John's first serious girlfriend, but she was one of the few serious ones that he dated.
So do you think they were dating before Lennon or before Cynthia or during?
It was after. It was after Lennon and her dated, and he was with Cynthia by that point. So Paul took notice, quote, quote, and, you know, they dated, which I'm like, that's so funny. Right. You're dating your friend's ex-girlfriend, but, you know.
And then she ended up marrying Roger McGough from Schofield. Scaffold. As we know that he ended up working with Paul's brother, Mike.
Yeah, small world.
Very small world. Another little relationship he had was with Iris Caldwell, who was a younger sister of Rory Storm and the Hurricanes. Exactly. But this one was a little different because she seemed a little more fiery, wasn't going to be controlled, you know,
She was really, really tough. And I don't know if you read, but she also did date George before that.
Right. Yes.
I think she was George's first real serious, like, girlfriend. But it was like the sort of puppy, like, 13-year-old, 14-year-old love, where it's you hold hands, but you don't actually do anything else, you know? But yeah, so it's really, really funny that they all, like, interchanged a lot.
Yeah, they were getting around. Yes.
But the
next serious relationship then would be Jane Asher, which we know. Let's talk about your show before we get into that. But you host this wonderful show called She Loves You, and it's all about the women in the lives of the Beatles. What, you know, was this something that you were very interested in? Because obviously you've been doing the Cynthia Lennon Instagram page before you started. I would say, right? So, you know, why take on this, you know, this venture all by yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I've been doing the page for about almost like 4 years now. So it's been a while. It's been a while. And I'm a big admirer of Cynthia Oxley. I think she's my favorite Beatles wife. She's just my favorite lady in Beatles history in general.
Okay.
But when it all came to the Beatles, like, you know, I love them and they're my everything. They're the reason I'm talking with you guys, you know, like, so, but I don't know what it was. I was always drawn to the women that were there with them, because I'd always see pictures of them with their wives or their girlfriend, whatever it was, or just any, I mean, any woman in particular had an effect on them, you know. And I always found that they were so interesting on their own when I finally began reading about them. And I was just amazed because they all have their own stories. They're so unique. They each have like their own personalities and were so wonderful. And I was like, oh, okay, I see why they fell in love with her. Oh, that makes sense. You know, she's a trailblazer. She's amazing.
Right.
And I still always say that I think women's stories especially need to be told always, because it's just so important. It's so important. And especially in Beatles history, I always think that women need to be way more represented, and especially like these women that have had such an effect on these like incredible men that, you know, created incredible music and history. And I just wanted to sort of bring their stories to light and help people understand why maybe these ladies had such an effect on them and why they're amazing. So I just really wanted to bring all that, you know, to the forefront for once, you know, because it's always hard when you're reading like a Beatles book or a Beatle biography and it'll have like one mention, oh, and he happened to be married, but then anyway, let's go to this, you know, like it's kind of upsetting because I'm like, no, there's like way more that you're not even talking about, you know. So I wanted to bring those stories to life, essentially.
Talk about the research a little bit. I mean, obviously, like you said, there's not a lot of research or not a lot of information out there about some of these people. I mean, you know, Mo never did a bio on herself, right? I mean, you have to rely on secondhand biographies or whatnot. I mean, talk about doing the research. I mean, has it been easy, you know, finding information on these women?
So for some, it has been very easy because two of them have written memoirs. So it's
Cynthia's got two. She's got two books, you know.
You got Patty.
You got Patty's book, which is fabulous, and everyone should read that. Both of the books are wonderful. So obviously for Cynthia and Patty, it was so easy. And here's the thing, even if Patty didn't write a memoir, you just know so much about her because, you know, she's the muse, you know. But for two of them, it's been easy. I would say for the other ladies, it's been a bit harder. But the great thing is the internet is just so wonderful. Like people literally just spread information that you wouldn't have known about. And with having the Cynthia Lennon page, actually, I've been able to connect with other people that run Beatle women pages, you know, Beatle Tumblrs, Beatle like on Google, and just so many people that I've been able to get information from. And it's wonderful because there are other amazing pages. Like there's a Jane Asher page, there's a Maureen page, there's so many pages that I've been able to just hit people up and say, hey, do you happen to know like what happened in 1966 or whatever, you know? So I've been able to research that way, but it's been years of me just finding stuff, like literally just going out myself, looking it up and finding And also just, you know, Beatle books from other people, you know, like, who, you know, when they get mentioned or so forth. I read like May Pang's book. I happened to find a copy of it and it was amazing. So, you know, like information from that. So just all over the place. I've been scattered, you know, but it's taken me a long time to gather all this. Like it has not been easy, but,
Cynthia's journey. I'm with you, Natalia. It's probably one of the more heartwarming ones to read and all of her stories. So I'm definitely with you on that because, you know, it was so, you know, such a roller coaster for her life and then divorcing John and everything else like that. And I actually got to witness her in person with Julian in Liverpool in 2010, dedicate the peace monument and with a couple hundred people. And she was so nice, like to see her really, embrace the whole thing again after all that time was pretty special to see. And I remember she got on the stage and she said, look at all the Scousers that turned out for this wonderful ceremony. It was just so nice to see her up there with Julian. And she didn't have to do that, you know, her ex-husband, but she's, you know, she was doing the right thing and it was really nice to see. So I'm totally with you on that.
She's an incredible lady. And, you know, she has a little bit of a funniness to her, which I don't think people really realize. And I think that's why, like, I love her so much. And you're so lucky to have been able to see that, because I, you know, I've never gotten to meet her. And unfortunately, she passed away.
Yeah, she walked right past me to the on the event, but I didn't say hi or anything, but I saw her.
Right. You're just like, oh my gosh, it's her. Yeah.
And it was incredible. And it's like, and of course, you know this because you've done your research. It's like, and you know, she was really considered a bit posh. She was from the other side of the water. You know, that's why her family did not like John. Her mother couldn't stand John Lennon.
No. But I will say, though, the irony of all of it is John was, you know, in doing my research, and I actually got to go to Liverpool in 2019. I got to go and I got to see John's house. But the irony of all ironies is that John was probably way richer than Cynthia was, you know, so it's so funny that he would just call her posh all the time when she was, in a way, but not really. I mean, not compared to his house. So it's hilarious.
Yeah. But that whole bit, the working class hero bit, right? The whole
right. I always go, were you though? Were you not working? Right.
Exactly.
Yeah. But no. Yeah. You are right though. Her mom just hated John, and it's just the funniest thing whenever I read her book again. Because
I remember there was that one. I think there was a little story about how when they were getting divorced or whatever, she came back and to get all the belongings out of the house or something, and John left a note and said, "Beat you to it, Lil," or something like that.
Yeah. Which is just so petty, but
right,
so
because petty. when her mother found out that he was with Yoko, her mother came flying down, and of course John beat her to it and just left a note, "Beat you to it, Lil." Typical.
I wanted to like fuck him in the face to just be like, ah, you know, yeah. Oh man, I swear.
That's funny. Yeah. You know, I'm kind of jealous in a way, you know, of you and, you know, the younger crowd, Ethan and even Hudson, who does the I Know show. Because, you know, when I'm discovering the Beatles, when I'm 15, it's 87, 88. And everybody's listening to the hair metal bands, you know, Madonna, Cyndi Lauper, Janet Jackson. I mean, all that. Michael Jackson's still big, you know, so I didn't get that, you know, camaraderie, or I didn't get to actually, you know, talk to people. One, because as we all know, and I hate this statement, because we all know there was no internet back then, but, you know,
it is
what it is. But, you know, so I had to take this journey by myself, and it's just so cool seeing that, you know, people like you and Ethan and others, you know, you get to, you know, find people like us, or, you know, other pages, like you said, you know, so you got other people out there to help you with this, which is really cool.
Yeah, no. And I mean, I think that's, like I said, I think that's the best part about being in this community, right? Like, we're all helping each other out whenever we need information, you know, and that's the best. And like you said, I think it helps that I'm young, but you know, like I've been able to really like get all this info because of the internet, and I'm sort of thankful for it. I mean, I think on the one hand, the internet's done a lot that's like, oh God, you know, like it's been a lot.
To your credit, you're tackling all the podcasts are great, right? Everybody's like so supportive and we all do good things, but yours is unique because it tackles a subject that nobody else has really touched upon. So it's a real welcome addition. So, you know, kudos to you.
That means the world. Oh my gosh. Thank you.
did you feel, because in the back of my mind, when me and my cousin, Andy wasn't part of the show then, unfortunately, but my cousin and I were starting this show, and in the back of my mind, I'm going, we need to hurry up and get this out, because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking there's others out there that are just getting ready to put this out.
So
I kind of felt like we rushed it when we should have taken a little bit more time. But then, however, when we put out our first episode, little did I know that there was also three other, you know, McCartney podcasts by then. And I didn't know, you know.
Yeah, no, it's actually really funny you say that, because thankfully, I was one of the first.
Right.
To do what I'm doing. Yeah. But in recent months, there have been more podcasts coming out, and it's really funny because I'm like, oh, that's great. I kind of took the high road, and I was like, we should collaborate sometime. And I have not gotten a message back, but I'm not gonna say anything, you know, because I don't really want to go there, but at the same time, I am thankful that I know I started it first.
Yeah, you just keep doing you. You just keep doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And whatever, and you know, like if the person in question decides to collaborate one day, it'd be great because we could do like a whole big, you know, like episode or whatever. But it does mean a lot because I like to consider myself the first, even though it doesn't really matter, you know, because we're all in the community. It's great. But yeah. It's
I love it. I know you want to stay humble, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Stay humble, you know. Yeah.
Right. So the first show was obviously Cynthia Lennon, right? Your first episode.
Yeah, my first was sort of introducing me and like why I decided to do this, and then I think my second episode was you know the first girl, Cynthia. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. And then second was Jane, correct?
Jane.
So let's jump into Jane because she's you know, she wants to be successful just like Paul. I mean, she's got goals. She wants to be every bit as, you know, popular, I'm sure, as, you know, as Paul's, you know, she's professionally minded, you know.
Yeah. She's a very dedicated young actress from the time she's 5 years old. You know, she had, you know, at 5 years old, she had her own career, you know, which is like, wow, you know, as a child to be able to do that is wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, but they actually met beforehand. They're doing a show at the Royal Albert Hall, and she's there. And I think she's actually doing an interview with them for BBC.
Yes. They were doing sort of a teen section, right? Like, what are the teens listening to today? What's in for the kids? I'm 22 and I'm acting as though I'm like 50, but you know, what's in it for the kids? But you know, yeah, you're right. They were doing that. And she was sort of the chosen guest as to what is popular, what isn't. Mm. And they were like, there's going to be this big variety show and it's going to be the Beatles and so forth. And come watch and review, you know? So it was one of those. Mm-hmm.
Gotcha. So it's funny because then it just seems like then in no time, Paul's actually living at their home.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, that night, that night was funny because all the Beatles. I don't know if you know, but they had seen her before because she'd been on Jukebox, which was a big show in England.
Sure.
Which was kind of like listening to the hey, right? Yeah, you know that. So they had all seen her before, right? But the thing is they all thought she was blonde. And then it wasn't until they met her. And I think, you know, John was like, we thought you were a blonde. This is crazy. You're a redhead, you know? Yeah, which is their dream, right? A blonde girl. But they all really liked her. But it was Paul who ended up becoming the gentleman of the night. Because John said an unruly comment that I should not even say. But but Paul was the gentleman that night, and they all were kind of like winking and were like, ooh, you know, he's gonna get it with Jane Asher. But he was such a gentleman, and they ended up just talking about like their favorite foods and like what kind of music he liked. And it was like really wonderful. And Paul realized, oh, you know, this is the girl for me. This is the girl that I really want to be with. So yeah, but
Paul's almost 20, and then here's Jane, what, 2 or 3 years younger.
Yeah, she was 17 they met. 17, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So she was young. She was a kid, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I don't know. I mean,
and at that age, I mean, to drug Tom, it doesn't seem like a big gap, but at that age, 2 or 3 years seems like a lifetime. You know, in terms of like, you know, and so you look at it now, and it's like not a big deal, but when you're that young, 2 years is a big two. So. You know, she's 17, Paul's 20. That's a big gap when you're that young.
Right.
Right. I mean, I couldn't even have imagined, like, at 17, me going out with a 20-year-old. Just in, not even, I mean, it is, it's the age difference, but even, like, the way we think is so different. You know, a 20-year-old is thinking way differently to a 17-year-old. But at that time, women just dated older men, and it was normal, you know, at that time. Way normal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've noticed that doing research that, at that point in time, I think even here in the States, that, you know, it was the common thing for younger women to date older men, you know, maybe security.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons why it could happen. Security, you find the men more like mature, you know, even, like,
John's dad ended up marrying a much younger woman too.
Yeah.
That's a whole other story, but yeah. Totally. That's a can of worms. But,
oh God, yeah. Yeah. So, do you credit the Eastmans, Paul, being with the Eastmans, for his kind of like introduction to the whole London culture thing? I think the Ashers had a lot to do with that. Do you agree?
Yeah, I would say so. Because as you mentioned, Paul ended up going to live with the Ashers for about like 2 years.
3 years, I think.
Yeah,
right?
two or three years. A long time. And yes, the Ashers were a very like influential family, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, Peter, her brother, and Jane, they started acting both, and then Peter became a musician.
Right.
He, you know, part of Peter and Gordon. But Mr. Asher and Mrs. Asher, they were very sophisticated Londoners. She was a music teacher at I don't remember what the school's called, but it's a very famous music school. And her father was a psychiatrist, and they were very knowledgeable on so many, you know, like on world culture and languages. And it was such a different world for Paul, because he'd never been with a family in general, one, because his mother died, so he didn't have a real big family, but also he had just never been with people that knew so much about like the world and culture.
Right.
And
so sophisticated, yeah.
Yeah, definitely sophisticated, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that the whole living arrangement kind of has interested me over the years, you know, that he's living there and he's dating a much younger, you know, girl with, you know, the mom and dad there, obviously, and Peter's still living there as well. So, I mean, they're not sharing the same room. I mean, he's living up in the attic.
And let's be honest, too, he was not living there, you know, every day. The man was, they were on tour and working. He wasn't, he was never really, he was living there, but I mean, not like and I would, no.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. I mean, he's there. I mean, obviously, he wrote, you know, a handful of songs there that have gone on to be, you know, worldwide successful songs. But it just has always kind of fascinated me about how, you know, he's there and not really, you know, in the same room with her, but it's just kind of interesting in a way.
I mean, I think it's also interesting because they didn't have a big commitment, you know, they weren't married, right. They weren't, you know, they were just dating, but I think that goes to show how much Paul really loved the Ashers in a way. Like he was able to be so comfortable with them and say, yeah, I'm going to live with them. Yeah. That sounds like a good idea, you know? Cause I think any 20-year-old would be freaked out of their mind to be living with their girlfriend's parents, you know?
That, and it probably the maternal instinct of Jane's mother to like, want to like, cause knowing that Paul lost his mom and he's down here in the South all by himself and he needs somebody to look after him. And
totally. And I think that's, you know, like Paul was not going to say no to that, you know,
no.
If I can get a home and a cooked meal, and, you know, my girlfriend's living there, why not? You know, I can see her every day now.
And again, with John being married and already having a child, it was just easy for him to go, okay, well, my girlfriend's here and they're going to look after me and they're a pretty nice family. I'll stay here.
Right, definitely. And I think he also really liked their music room because, as I said, you know, her mom was a music teacher. So he already had a room at his dispense to essentially write music all day and just, you know, mess around with instruments he didn't know how to play, you know. So it was a perfect situation, essentially, in a lot of ways. Yeah.
So we know that Jane's ambitious herself, you know, and wanting in her acting field, you know. Annie, you mentioned, you know, Paul's not always there because he's touring the world as well, but then I'm sure when he gets back, you know, he wants to spend time with his girlfriend, but now she's you know, working as well, doing what, theater and films as well, right, Natalia?
Yeah, she pretty much worked a lot of the time because, you know, that's her job. That's her profession. Right. She was doing a lot of theater, a lot of TV appearances, movies and whatnot. So yeah, she was working all the time and she had her own life essentially beyond Paul, you know, which is great.
But, right. Yeah. So she's got her own career. She's making her money. And, you know, Paul's obviously making a living too, not being able to probably control her as much as he was able to control past girlfriends.
Yes. That was a big sort of shock to him was that, you know, oh, it's great that she's an actress. You know, he probably thought it's great that she's an actress and she's so cool and worldly. But then he realized, oh, wait, she's an actress. She has a life beyond me. It's not just me.
24. Right. Fiercely, fiercely independent, you know?
Oh, yes. Yes. That's the word I always use when it comes to her. She was not going to ever give up anything for Paul McCartney. Not her career, not her life, nothing. So.
Right. Good point. Some of those, I mean, I tend to think that Jane was a better muse for Paul lyrically as opposed to Linda, because I mean everything was always, you know, lovey-dovey with Linda, which we'll talk later.
This is a good point. I know where you're going with this
about this, but lyrically, I mean, the, you know, the on again off again or the fiery relationship, however you want to call it, with Jane, I mean, I think provided some of Paul's best lyrics to songs.
I would not disagree with that at all. I think, and that's why I say, I think Jane is probably one of, you know, besides Linda, obviously, she is the most important person in Paul McCartney's life. One of the few, because she really inspired his greatest songs.
Yes.
His greatest lyrics. And I think, like you said, everything was so lovey-dovey with Linda, which is wonderful because, you know, they loved each other and all that. But I think Jane challenged him in the way to look at love in a different way. And that's why I love it so much. Yeah.
Love has a nasty habit of disappearing overnight.
Overnight.
Right. Right. I mean, even in like, You Won't See Me, right? There's some like great lyrics going on there. And I'm just like, that's amazing.
That, which
I wouldn't mind if I knew what I was missing. You know, it's one of my favorite lines.
And Tom, you bring up a good point. There's just that, there's that kind of caustic kind of back and forth with Paul and Jane's relationship in those lyrics that just is not present in the lyrics that he's with Linda. Not that they're bad lyrics, it's just different.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's just different.
But it's interesting.
Yeah, and it's great because I always like to say you see the journey of a guy loving one woman and then loving another, right? Like you've got this young love that's so worldly and amazing, but then and it has heartbreak and a lot of like fighting and a lot of like
anger, you know? Writing a song like For No One with Linda. Yeah,
not because the journey, exactly. Right, that journey, you know, you start off with a song like And I Love Her, and then you're working through You Won't See Me, you know, I'm Looking Through You, and then, you know, and then For No One, it's just so like finished.
And like, keep in mind, and keep in mind this all happened within the span of like what, like a couple years only.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Crazy. Yeah.
Right. And they're still officially together while all these great songs are he's writing all these great songs while they're still officially together, you know.
Right. I mean there was periods where specifically like in the late 60s, obviously, when it was kind of getting to the point where it just wasn't going to work out, where they would separate, but Paul just was like, I couldn't live without her, and I had to be with her, you know? So it was one of those things, and I think that's why it brought out, like you said, his best lyrics, I'd say.
Right.
Yeah. Natalia, was there a period there in their relationship where where you think they were just together on paper, but not really like the last year, like 68, 67?
You know, I actually am one of the few people that I truly, truly do think up until the last minute, Paul was in it for good. I truly do believe that. I would say that it got bad. Not necessarily on Paul's side, because I think he still thought everything's good. Even if I have, you know, women and this and whatnot, we're still going to get married. You know, it has to happen. You know, I can't. Right. But I don't actually think on Jane's side, it was definitely coming back from India, knowing that, you know, he was still going to be the man he was. And So for me, I would say that was on, for her, on her side, it was definitely just on paper. But on his, mm-hmm. I truly still believe that he thought, you know, like, I'm going to make this work. I'm going to get married. Because, you know, they did get engaged. So.
Right. And I was going to bring that up in a second here, because 67 is a big year, you know, for McCartney, not only musically, but also relationship wise, because in 67, we know, and specifically in May of 67, that's when he first meets Linda.
Oh, yeah.
Bag of nails, you know, and, you know, he calls out to her, hey, let's, you know, let's talk. And then obviously a few days later, they're talking during for the Sgt. Pepper, you know, press release. So they're getting to know each other then there too. And then flash forward on December 25th, he proposes to Jane.
Right. Which is like crazy, right? Like I say, life is happening the way it's supposed to, you know, like it's one of those things where it just had to happen, you know, like Linda had to come in and change everything. And yeah, no, Paul was definitely thinking about her a lot, but I don't actually think he was as serious with Linda as a lot of people like to believe at that point. I think he was still very much okay with being the playboy, having Jane with him. You know, cause they did go on a date, quote unquote, at the after the Bag and Nails meeting and all that. But, I don't actually think he was as serious yet. I don't think it was until Jane really left him that he realized, oh, okay, you know, I have to get my act together, you know, if I'm ever gonna have a family that I want. Cause you know, he did want a family. But yeah.
I've always been amazed on how tight-lipped Jane has been over all these years about their relationship.
Oh, definitely. She's been the most like, hold my head up high. I'm a very private person. I don't need to air my dirty laundry to anybody because what's that going to do? You know, I am too. And I think that's why I really admire her as well. I'd actually say she's my sort of second favorite Beatle girl overall, just because how classy she is. And you know, truth be honest, she doesn't have to do, you know, she doesn't have to say it, you know, like, we know what happened, you know, and like she says, she's been married now for over like 30 something years, you know, like why go there again?
Right. Exactly.
But I do know the curiosity, like, believe me, if she would come out with a book, I'm pretty sure it would be bestseller. And I know that we would all freak out, you know, the day it comes out.
You just got to kind of like have a feeling because a lot of the women, I mean, there's only been really one that has really been very vocal about their relationship with Paul. And we'll get to that probably in part two.
Right.
You know, but other than that, I mean, a lot, you know, Jane, I mean, and others, even going back to Dot, I mean, they've been really respectful to keep in their relationship mostly private.
Yeah. And I applaud them for that. Cause on the one hand, whose business is it anyway? Right. You know, what happened years ago. But I mean, she's such a classy lady. Both of them are. Right. And I totally understand. I totally understand why they wouldn't.
But a Jane book would be pretty fascinating.
Could you imagine?
but not necessarily just because of the McCartney Jane relationship, but because of everything she got to see. She got to see the band blow up, you know, she got to see all that, you know, success. I mean, she, you know, and then the time they traveled to see the Maharishi, you know, I mean, so many different adventures that she got to experience.
And even just her acting career, right? Being in the 60s, being an actress, what that meant, you know, she knew a lot of really interesting people. And one of the reasons Paul was so eclectic and a lot of the things he did at that time was because of her.
Good point.
Yeah. And her brother.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And her brother, you know, being Peter and Gordon, you know, like they just, they were the kind of, besides, I guess, George and Patty, you know, Jane and Paul were the it couple of the 60s in London. You know, they were the couple. So, I mean, just a Jane book about that would be amazing. Just, you know, who she knew in the 60s, you know? Yeah.
And she has been, I guess, I don't know if she's still currently, like, I know she did some TV there for a while in the UK. She was like a presenter on the BBC or some on a show or something. I don't know how prolific her career she still is, but I know that she did a lot of TV work there in England.
Yeah, yeah. I think like about 2 years ago, she was doing some stage work. I can't remember what the show was or anything, but it was like on the West End. And yeah, she's still going, you know, wow. Like she's still, and her new sort of career that she has is her baking, because she's a baker. Yeah. So she's a lot of like Jane Asher baking products and whatnot. So yeah, she's a great cook, but still has her acting career going, you know.
She's got to compete with the Linda McCartney recipe stuff now.
right. But then I think, wow, Paul really liked women that knew how to cook. There you go.
Yeah.
Similarity, so, right?
Yeah. So Paul, then I think in 65 he gets the house on Cavendish Avenue. He never really officially moves in, right?
Yeah, but him and, you know, I think him and Jane technically moved in together. I think they did, and then they started living there. But again, they're away so much that it's like they're not living together. You know what I mean?
Right.
All engagements and concerts and tours and
shows, and she's traveling, right?
Yeah, yeah, she's doing traveling shows as well, because I think some of their shows would go to different cities and stuff like that. Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, but then that's, I also find it interesting that she was also the one that kind of put the bug in Paul's ear to get the home in Hyde Park, you know.
Right. Yeah. For sure.
Which is kind of interesting as well. Not that she gets to spend much time there, yeah. as we know, Paul and, you know, and Linda ended up
doing. Are you talking about the house in Scotland?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think it was, you know, for privacy, you know, she said, right. Like, you know, because I think she figured he was going to propose eventually around that time, and he did. So she's right. Like, I want a place for us to be able to just be alone, yeah. Because no one's going to leave us alone if we stay in London. So I definitely think, it is kind of fascinating that she was the one to say, let's get a farmhouse, you know, because of all the right. people, I don't think Jane Asher would have lived in a farmhouse, but there you go, right?
Interesting. Oh, city
girl. Yeah. Big time city girl. So, yeah. You know, all this is going on. Obviously, you know, we learned that Paul is seeing other women during this time too, especially later on. And a couple I've done some research on was, one was, her name is Maggie McGovern. She was, this started in 66. And again, she's much younger. She's 20. At the time, she's an actress and model as well. Really interesting, she was hired as a nanny for Marianne Faithfull and John Dunbar, you know, yeah. Which is pretty interesting.
See what I mean? All these people just knew each other. It was nanny, right. Friends and whatnot. Yeah. So they met through that, because John Dunbar, he owned the Indica Gallery, I believe, which was which is a very significant, as we know, in Beatles history. But he owned that. So Jane, I believe, was a big, you know, like follower of the Indica Gallery. So, you know, they all knew each other through that. And Paul knew John Dunbar, obviously, and all that.
Right. So, Yeah. So, I mean, obviously now they're meeting at the Dunbar's place, you know, making sure, keeping it a secret. No one else is there.
Yeah. She's like, you're a nanny. What are you doing? Like, you have to take care of the kid. Like, it's not you.
The kids are getting put to bed, you know.
Yeah.
Paul's coming over secretly, you know.
Started an affair and whatnot. Right.
However, it does tend to get out a little bit, because then Paul's inviting, or he's getting comfortable with her, because Paul does invite her to get on that Magical Mystery Tour bus during filming of Magical Mystery Tour. She does get to see a rough cut. She does hang out to see that. And it's kind of funny because, you know, they go out and they travel together in cars, whatnot, but Paul kind of like, you know, has the car stop early to drop her off at a different location. So then, you know, he can get to his location by himself. You know what I mean? So it's all hush hush.
It just gets complicated at that point. Like, what is the You know, yeah, but yeah, they're having a big affair, but yet nobody knows about it, but everybody knows about
Could you imagine if the Beatles were like living and this was all going on now with social media, there everything would get exposed and be out there. They'll forget about all these things that people are taking to their graves.
Oh,
you would all know about it.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's media would not have worked in the modern age. Not at all.
No way.
Good point, Annie. This would, I mean, all of this stuff would be, I mean, it would, everybody
forget
would
forget about there it.
No secrets. Absolutely no secrets.
None. That's why, I mean, these people that witness this stuff and know about stuff like the Neil Aspinalls and the Jane, like they're taking this stuff to their grave.
Right. I mean, only a few people know about this relationship. I mean, obviously, you know, John, Brian, and I think Mike, his brother, ends up knowing because, you know, from time to time she's staying at the house on Cavendish, you know. So it's. But then the also thing was I found pretty fascinating is they both shared an interest in the transcendental meditation, which, you know, she was studying before Paul, you know, went to the Maharishi. So right. That was kind of interesting as well.
Yeah. And it's always interesting reading about them just because they lasted like 3 years, which is not a short time, you know, like,
no.
To have an affair for that long, I mean, is right. That fair at that point? It's just a relationship, but it's interesting. She was very interested in meditation and that was a big like drawing point to each other. And they had a lot of similarities, but at the same time, and actually, I think I remember reading, she said her mom knew about what was going on because she told her mom, you know, I'm having a relationship with Paul McCartney, but just, you know, like it's secret. No one should know.
Right.
But yeah, I think her mom, John and Brian really figured out about it.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, like you said, it is on again, off again for like 3 years. And it just seems like Paul, you know, is always kind of like in a way, you know, going back and reaching out to her because, you know, she is quiet. She is respectful for and keeping it, the relationship hush hush, which I'm sure, you know, he likes. And there are, you know, there is literature on how they would just sit and talk together, you know, and have conversations, you know?
Yeah. I mean, she had to have been a very interesting person, right? Obviously for him to have had such an interest and, you know, want to be with her. But I think they like wanted a lot of the same things, which was another thing. But you know, it was an affair because he still was with Jane, right? You know, there's that problem.
I was also reading that he even asked her, like, what do you think about getting married, you know? Let's see what happens, you know.
He even said, like, do you want to get married one day, maybe? But you know, in her mind she's thinking, I'm like 21, you know.
Right.
But she said, oh, maybe one day, you know. But to him, I think that meant, oh, okay, she's not ready, she doesn't want it, you know, she's not gonna marry me. But then I think I was reading an interview she did and she was like, I should have said yes in that moment. I know I should have said yes, and it was the biggest mistake of my life, but you know, just one of those things where things happen for a reason, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the other interesting relationship that happens while Jane is still technically in the picture is the relationship with Francine Schwartz, who at that time is 24 years
old. Kaboom!
Exactly.
Yeah. Just 24-year-old New Yorker who makes her way to the Apple offices in Wingmore Street. She wants to propose some kind of script, which she thinks that Paul would be perfect in. She makes her way in her offices. Paul does notice her. Paul does take her to a side room for, you know, some kind of
meeting. They all go to Paul first to pitch ideas, including Yoko.
I think he's the easiest one to get through first.
Most approachable probably at that point in time, you know?
Yeah. Although I feel like if you're going to like approach someone with an idea, go to Ringo. I feel like he's down for anything. Why would you go to
right?
That's funny. You know, so they have this conversation. She never pitches the idea. She ends up getting a job working at the Derek Taylor's press office. And right away again, now here's, you know, a relationship starts.
Another one. Yeah, I know. I mean, it's like at that point, he just couldn't resist. Just go for it all. If you're gonna just, you know, go for it all. Yeah.
Right. So she does get to witness a lot of White Album sessions. You know, she's there, you know, quite often. The one interesting thing, because she is staying with Paul quite a bit at the Cavendish house, mm-hmm. is, you know, when John and Yoko move in, she is there the day that John finds the postcard. You know, you and your Jap tart think you're not shit.
Yeah.
So
she has gone, been quoted saying that she could tell, she could see the hurt in John's eyes after reading that you know, that letter that that Paul's always said was, you know, just a joke.
And how often do you what do you chalk up to the fact that maybe Paul was with Francie Schwartz, just throwing caution to the wind because the John and Yoko thing was now happening, and he's like, you know what, I don't really care, I'm just going to do this with her, and because my relationship with my buddy is like going down the tank, and I don't really care.
I think at that point it was just such a mess, everything happening all at the same time, that you know, like, Paul just went nuts and was like, okay, I'm gonna go with Francie, I'm gonna say this about whatever, you know. So you know, I think they were both just going through such a hard time, and it was easier to act out instead of actually say what was bothering them, you know. But
I always thought Francie was more of a rebound from Jane than anything, but then you read that he still, you know, feels for Jane and still hasn't really officially, you know, ended the relationship, which I don't think has ever really officially ended. You know, I don't think anybody really actually said, you know, this is over.
Yeah. I mean, obviously we know Jane found them in bed together, and that was the end of it all. She immediately, you know, and what's so classy about her, because she's such a classy lady. She found them. She didn't say a word. She just darted out. And then her mom go gets her things and is like, goodbye, you know, you're never seeing her again. See you later. But you know, I think she even said it, like, I didn't technically end it, but it's over. Like, he knows that it's never going to happen again.
Which is so weird when you think about, like, Paul's relationship with Peter Asher, which continues past Jane. And Peter even to this day still talks fondly about Paul. So it's like,
he wrote a whole book about the Beatles that came out pretty recently, you know, like, but I will say, I think it has more to do with the whole, we're both music colleagues and we both work in the same world. So we're obviously going to run into each other, and we better make the most of it, you know? But I do think Peter did have a fondness for Paul. I think he always liked Paul, and maybe not for his sister, but I think he liked Paul just as a person.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and all this time, again, still, we're reading that he's still in the back of his mind is, you know, has Linda, you know, so and he goes to New York for the Apple thing, you know, they're in California for the Tonight Show, and, you know, they meet up, and then the next day, you know, he's calling her, hey, come to London, and, you know, so it all is still going back to, in a way, going back to Linda, all while, you know, he's still in this, you know, he's still in kind of this, I would say, I don't know if you could say he was still in love with Jane, but he still had probably, you know, feelings for her.
I mean, he was in a mourning period for sure. I was reading, I can't remember whose book it was, because I've read so many Beatle books in my life, but it was someone who worked with them, I remember that, and there was a quote where he was saying that Paul, there would be nights where Paul, this is like after they, you know, broke up, but there would be nights where Paul would just be drinking like a whole bottle and would say, like, I messed up my life, you know, she was the best thing that ever happened to me, I'm a horrible person, you know, like, what am I gonna do now, you know. He was really depressed, you know, because that's a 5-year relationship, you know, that's not something that goes away, even if there was problems and, you know, like, affairs and all that. It's tough. Yeah, he was.
Well, and you bring up a good point, because that right there just shows that he has a conscience, and he can admit that he screws up. Whereas, like, you know, maybe you don't have that same feeling with John when he starts this big relationship with Yoko. He doesn't really feel like he messed up his life.
Yeah, you know. Because he felt he needed to broadcast to the world, look at the right. better choice I made and look at how right. happy I am. But, you know, reading Cynthia's book, you know, that's probably not true in a lot of ways. Mm. But right. yeah, no, at least, like you say, Paul knew what he did and he knew how bad he messed up. And you know, he figured, I'm never going to find someone as good as Jade, you know, so he had a conscience, right? Like, he's actually, not that John isn't a good human being, but Paul at least knew how he messed up, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. So we get the, you know, we get the, you know, we're in 68 right now. Linda's going to come to London. She's going to get dropped off at Paul's home, wait for him to come back from, I think it was a
White Album sessions, yeah.
But we're going to talk about that on part two.
All right, yeah. The big love story. I love it.
Because enter, exit, Jane. Welcome, Linda.
Yeah.
Welcome, Linda, because this could be a 3-hour conversation, you know what I mean?
It could be like especially, a 2-month conversation, I swear.
Yeah, exactly. But Natalia, before we go, I want you to talk a little bit more about your show. Tell us about where we can find it. You know, what's up with it? Because you did take a little bit of a break from the show, right?
Yeah, I took a little bit of a mental health break just because I had family actually coming over also. So it was hard to sort of record without, you know, needing to be with the family because it was my grandparents. So obviously they're a bit older and it was tough. So I needed to do that. And also just for my own sanity, because I felt like I was trying to do too much at once.
But
it is coming back and I'm hopefully going to actually record my Patty episode tomorrow, which I'm really, really excited about.
Excellent.
That actually might be my longest episode just because there is so much to talk about with that.
Right.
there's just so much. But for now, you can find me on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. But I just got Anchor, so I'm hoping I can put it to more outlets and all that. So I hope I can have way more ways for people to listen if they don't have Apple or Spotify or anything like that. Right. And I'm actually thinking of maybe putting a lot of the episodes on YouTube just so people are able to listen.
Absolutely. That would be a great idea. Just more exposure, really.
Definitely.
And so, it's easier too. You click in YouTube and there it is. It's right there. I mean, a lot of times people got to go on Google. You got to click the name of the podcast and where is it, you know?
Yeah. So most likely that's sort of new things coming, you know, that's going to be the next step. But yeah, for now though, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, we'll see how it goes, but I am coming back and I'm recording hopefully tomorrow. So
awesome. That's great. Well, we look forward to that. And then the Cynthia Lennon Instagram page. And that's just what, Cynthia Lennon on Instagram?
Yeah. Cynthia Lennon Daily on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah. I try to update as much as I can. I do it every 2 days, I'd say. Not every day, because I used to post every day, but it's gone to the point where I'm like, I can't keep looking for quotes every single day. It's getting a lot, you know. you can follow me on there. Pretty active on that page, so you know, if anyone wants to shoot me a message or anything, I'm there. I try to just kind of update it with facts and like daily quotes and all that, mainly because there's just so much on Cynthia that you've read, but there's so much more that we don't know that's not in her book. I try to update it usually, and it's been like almost 5 years now, and it's great.
That's
great commitment.
I've gone to speak to so many like people that knew Cynthia and John, and it's been like amazing because
that's
they're
great. Just, like, you're so now, can you see, now let me ask you that, can you see yourself doing that on your show, you know, interviewing people that
I'm hoping, you know, with after talking with Ethan, he was like, you know, I have a lot of people that I know and I can just let you know. I'm hoping to bring in more people. Like, I'd love to have you guys on just to talk about like your favorite Beatle girl and like why you like them and all that.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that'd be fun. I'm hoping to have Ethan on the show. I'm actually hoping to get an interview with Jude Kessler maybe one
time. Jude's wonderful.
Just because I love her books on John. Like I'm writing, reading like the second one right now, and it's just fabulous. And everything she's done for Cynthia, and even like May Pang, because I know, you know, she's a big May Pang person, and I love that because I'm a very big May Pang person. But yeah, so I'm hoping to get her perspective on, you know, Cynthia and all the women in John's life. And yeah, I'm hoping to speak to more people, like hopefully as time goes on. And I'm trying to even get Helen Anderson, who was like a really big friend of John's. But I'm sort of working my way up there because me and Helen have spoken a lot, but cool. I'm a little anxious, as you know, she might say no, which is totally fine, but I'd love
it. It's going to happen, unfortunately. Every once in a while, you'll get somebody that will say no, and it'll hurt your feelings for a couple minutes, and then you'll just move on.
I know. Yeah. So hopefully, maybe, you know, if all goes right, I'll have her on the show, because I would love to hear.
That would be a great score.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Cause I, you know, her and John were, you know, besides Cynthia, her being friends, her and John were just close as could be. And
yeah,
we're wonderful friends.
And we're getting to the point now, these people are getting up there, and they're any chance that, you know, of anything they can share with us, is they're either going to share it or we're not going to know about it, because it becomes fact, or once they're gone, it becomes myth. So
you gotta get it out there now before anything happens. Yeah.
Any chance that you can get to these people to talk, it would be great. So good luck.
I know. Hopefully, we'll see. We will see. But yes.
That's awesome. So what we'll do is we'll put the links to all of your stuff. You know, when we post this show. But Natalia, it was wonderful having you here for part one. You know, you're great. I'm really looking forward to part two, because this was a really great conversation. Andy, anything you want to add before we sign off?
No, it could be maybe even a three-parter. We'll see. Linda could just be part two. And then Heather might even just be a part three.
Oh, God, yeah. That could be like part seven at that point.
But yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. It's been a blast and a refreshing episode to record. So thank you.
Well, thank you so much for having me, you guys. Honestly, it's been so much fun. Thank you.
You got it. Do you have an email that you want to, or do you want people to get in touch with you or anything like that? Yeah. Twitter or anything like that?
I'm going to keep all my stuff private just because privacy.
That's fine.
But if anyone wants to shoot me an email, it's Natalia m2790@gmail.com. I'm always there, so just hit me a message if anyone wants to know any info on Beetle Girls. I am here. I am your source.
Excellent. So thank you once again. You can find Two Legs everywhere, obviously, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter at Two Legs Podcast. You can like our pages there. Check out our YouTube channel, Two Legs, a Paul McCartney Podcast. We're inching ever so closely to 600 subscribers. So thank you for that. Yeah, and the end of our Ranking the Track series is coming to a close here real soon. I think right now we've got a tentative date of the 17th to record our last episode of that with some family members. We're going to have my old co-host David Gargolino on, our art director Ethan Alexanian, and our musical director Dylan Seavey, it's just going to be the five of us, kind of like a little bit of a family reunion type thing, and we're going to rank the tracks of McCartney 3, and really looking forward to that. That should be a lot of fun. And you know, email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. There's always the website twolegspodcast.com, right?
That's it.
And man, a lot of ways to get us. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Podbean, this one, that one, and anywhere that the podcasts are. And you got us. You got us there, Andy. So thank you.
No problem. Google is your friend.
Yeah, there you go. So everybody out there, thank you again for watching. We'll be back with Natalia in a couple months for part two. Really looking forward to it. So as always, everybody out there, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care. Bye.
hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan Smith.